Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
I'm Dan Nalen, and this is Slug Soundwaves, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this very special episode, we're going to talk to our resident experts about all the great movies they saw up at the Slam Dance Film Festival, the Sundance Film Festival, and we'll hear some tunes from The Devil Makes Three and Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. We're going to jump right in first with the Slam Dance Film Festival. We are welcoming to our beautiful little studio Slug senior writer John Ford and editorial assistant Alexander Ortega. First of all, welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Dan.
You know, a lot of people probably think of Slam Dance as like smaller, but this was actually the 20th year, right? So, I mean, it's been going a long time. They brought a lot of awesome movies here over the years. Why don't we just start by giving us just sort of your general impressions maybe of what you saw at the festival and sort of the vibe of the Slam Dance scene this year. John, why don't you start with that?
Sure. I've always liked Slam Dance a little bit more because it's smaller. You get a lot more intimate feel just with the directors and the actors. Everyone who comes to the festival, they're all right there in the same location, so you're kind of just mixing it up with all of them. You know, they're all at the Q&As. You just get a lot more interaction that way. Yeah.
That is kind of nice. Alex, what do you think?
Yeah, it was actually my first time ever going up to anything during Sundance and hence Slam Dance. Yeah. And so I like the feel of it as well, seeing as how it is situated in the same location. It's almost like it's like a slumber party or something. Everyone's kind of there, like,
those happen
together
a lot there too. Yes.
I can kind of sense that, like, the people that have been there, who've
year
seen the films
years,
like working Slam Dance, like, they're kind of in the back just kind of hanging out like the theater, which is cool because, you know, they want to stick around and be there for the sense
in
of
fact,
community.
There was one filmmaker this year who spent the festival in his car.
Oh, really?
Because he couldn't afford to get a place. So
that's pretty standard, I would imagine. It's so expensive up
that's
there.
That's not
it's
bad thinking.
Right? And the weather was good enough this year that you could survive and not freeze to death overnight, actually.
It was beautiful.
Well, Alex, since this was your first time up there, I mean, was it kind of what you expected based on what you'd heard from people in the past? Just the whole scene, you know, Park City in the middle of January.
Yeah, from John, it was kind of, I got what I was expecting. And, you know, it was definitely felt like the people that were there and whom you saw it, you know, more than one screening, were definitely there to either show their films or see other people's films or engage in conversation about making films. And so it was a nice breath of fresh air from walking up Main Street and seeing, like, the fur-lined boots and fur-lined hats for no
and
reason.
And not just because you were out of the inversion.
Yeah, right.
Not just because I was out of the inversion, because, you know, the those people, I feel like the people at Slam Dance weren't there to be seen necessarily. They were there to
work and network and all that with their films.
It felt genuine.
Right. Nice. Well, let's delve into some of the movies that were there this year. John, why don't you, hit us with a couple of your faves.
So one of my favorites this year was a film called Copenhagen. And this one was written and directed by Mark Rassow. And it starred Gethin Anthony. Game of Thrones fans will recognize that name, even though his character is now dead in that show.
Oh, man! I haven't started watching it yet!
Spoilers! My God! And it also stars, and I'll probably mispronounce this, Fredrik Dalhansen as Will and Effie in the film. It starts out as a kind of searching for family because he's looking for his grandfather in Copenhagen. But it turns into this much more, like, story about growing up, because he's 28 and he's a very immature person. So it becomes this much more about growing up than about finding your family. And it was beautiful to look at, just, I mean, in Copenhagen. And
nice.
They're both amazing actors, so, yeah.
And what else is on your list of the best?
Surprisingly, a couple of short films this year made it into my top. One is The Chaperone, which they refer to as a hand-drawn true story. And it kind of includes this combination of animation and stop motion puppetry and a little bit of live action, just kind of this combination of everything. It's a true story about a teacher who was chaproning a dance in Montreal in 1973, and this motorcycle gang just kind of rolls in and starts disrupting things, and him and the DJ and the kid working the concessions just kind of, they lay him down, and they beat the crap out of this motorcycle gang.
Wow.
And the animation is fabulous. The narration for the film is actually an interview of Ralph and Stefan, who were the chaperone and the DJ.
Nice.
And they take that interview and just animate it with all these different styles, including several exploding pinata heads.
Nice.
So it is just fabulously hilarious and really entertaining.
Excellent.
My last one is a film called Meet My Rapist, which might put some people off at first.
just in the title. Don't judge them. Don't judge.
Exactly.
Yeah, the tone of the title is kind of chipper.
But it's a film by Jesse Kahnweiler, and I'll probably mispronounce that too. I'm doing horrible at that this week.
Yeah.
But it basically criticizes rape myths and attacks the stereotypes on how people are supposed to deal with being a victim of rape. And it kind of is this experiment in representation, in that her dealing with it is actually represented by her rapist being there. And there are kind of some awkward situations where she brings her rapist to dinner with her parents, and she brings her rapist to therapy with her, and to a job interview, and like all these situations. And what's interesting is that some people can see the rapist and some people can't, and so it's like this, those who know can see and those who wouldn't cannot see, but it still affects her.
Right. It's
and so
interesting.
It's really, yeah, it does a great job of kind of forcing a conversation about something that really needs to be talked about more. So
that sounds like a really good one, a really creative way to do that. Alex, highlights from your experiences up there?
Well, I think that there was a really stark difference for me with the narrative fictitious features and the documentaries. I felt like they were just two totally different ballgames. But like with regular narrative features, I think that My Blind Heart was one that really resonated with me a lot. It's an, I believe, an Austrian film, but obviously it was spoken in German, and the people were from Vienna, and it refers to Vienna in the film. It's in black and white, and it's about a kid who has Marfan syndrome. And which is like a rare disease that, you know, affects the sight and the lungs and whatnot, and kind of the way he interacts with the world in a sort of almost nihilistic way. He kills his mother at the beginning and then goes into like a group home with others who have handicaps, but then just goes out on his own. I thought it was a very smart commentary on the idea of people with handicaps. And another issue that the film addresses is this sort of trend of parents customizing their baby's genetics before they're born, so they aren't born with any sort of handicaps or disabilities or anything like that, and dealing with the idea of validation in face of those technological advancements. And, you know, dealing with the issue was written into the script in a really like poetic way, and it, a lot of it had to do with like anger at society for wanting to perfect people in that regard. And so I thought it was really impactful, and again, a smart way to comment on handicaps, like through fiction, basically, of a
film. Interesting. Yeah, through the narrative. Nice.
Yeah.
Do you see some good documentaries in the mix, or?
Yeah, I feel like all the documentaries that I saw were pretty good, but there was Vanishing Pearls was a really good one, which talked about the community of Pointe La Hache in the bayous of Louisiana and how the BP oil spill affected their fishing industry of finding clams and the dispersants that they used to, you know, quote unquote, clear up the oil, actually ultimately ending up, you know, making this oil seep into nascent clam babies, little baby clams, and, you know, killing off these people's industry. Mm. And while BP hired, I think his name was Rosenberg, which was a lawyer that was, you know, basically saying, hey, we're going to give you reparations for the damage, but essentially what they did was starve these the people in these communities out by saying, like, hey, we're just waiting for the full damage to take its toll so we know how much to give you. Just wait this much longer.
Right.
Or you can buy out for $5,000.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is like, you know.
Survive.
Yeah, survive. So it was,
since you can't work, right? Yeah. Oh, wow.
So that one was, pretty heavy. A lot of the documentaries I saw were pretty heavy. Then there was another narrative piece called Goldberg and Eisenberg, which was really great, psychological thriller. Eisenberg basically starts harassing and stalking Goldberg and, for lack of better words, just does some really fucked up things to him. Like, you know, finds his girlfriend's dog and cuts its leg, or cuts its leg off, and like, it's dead and whatnot. And the way it ends is like the good guy doesn't win. Like, it was great.
I love independent film for that reason.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Well, we just have a little bit of time. Any more just little highlights you want to mention, or anything? Any thoughts on the big picture Slam Dance vibe?
I saw a narrative called The Republic of Rick that was just hilarious, a documentary called Skanks that was also hilarious. We did a piece on it, actually, for the January issue.
Nice.
And another documentary called Sometimes I Dream I'm Flying, which was beautifully shot. I mean, if I hadn't known it was a documentary, I'd have sworn it was a narrative. I mean, wow. It was just gorgeous.
Nice. Alex?
Yeah, like I said, some of the documentaries also were great for me. Kidnapped for Christ, it's about, you know, evangelical boot camp in the Dominican Republic. Kids,
oh, wow,
being taken early in the morning to shape up, as it were, for things like being gay. Their,
yeah,
parents are paying more than the tuition of Harvard to send their kids there.
And, wow, reprogramming. Yeah.
And then one I watched last night, Who Took Johnny, which I thought was just kind of be a, you know, a whatever documentary, but I watched it alone, and I felt kind of scared. Like, it was about Johnny Gosch, who was the first kid to appear on the milk carton, and how he was abducted into a child sex ring.
Wow, the first kid on a milk carton.
Yeah.
That's some serious shit. Wow.
Yeah, and then Cockfight was an anarchy short, which I thought was really clever as well, and the director was, it was his first film, his first short film before he was doing graffiti writing.
Oh, wow.
And he decided he wanted to be a filmmaker.
Nice.
It was great.
So many good things. Well, of course, you can get all of John and Alex's writings from the festival, reviews at slugmag.com. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing with us. And people, you can go out there and Google. Maybe some of these films will pop up out there. People can see them online, things like that. And hopefully some theaters soon, too. Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for coming in, you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, yeah, Dan.
We were all up in Park City, jumping around various festival festivities. We had a lot of great music come through town, both in Park City and down here in Salt Lake. One of the groups, The Devil Makes Three, is a personal favorite of mine, at least live. I've seen them several times. They played a show up at the Music Cafe, as well as a headlining show down in Salt Lake during the festival. They're out of Santa Cruz, California, but originally they're from Vermont, so they have a pretty interesting story. No drums involved, acoustic, kind of punky bluegrass. They have a total of 6 albums out, including 2 live ones, and they have a brand new album called I'm a Stranger Here that just came out a couple months ago. This is a song called Worse or Better from The Devil Makes Three. Came out, man, we screamed out loud. information on the band, check them out online at thedevilmakes3.com.
Plan B Theater Season of Merit continues with the world premiere of Clearing Bombs, running February 20th to March 2nd. Written and directed by Eric Samuelson, Clearing Bombs is a play about economics and defining the future amid mortal danger. Set in the summer of 1942, economists Friedrich Hayek and John Maynard Keynes spent a night on the roof of King's College Chapel in Cambridge, joined by a fire warden named Mr. Bowles, waiting to clear away and control German incendiary bombs. Details and tickets at planbtheater.org.
This is your weekly daily calendar for the week starting on February 4th and running through February 10th. Lots of goodies at slugmag.com. Scroll down to the bottom of that homepage. Check out that calendar every day. There's always great events being added to that thing, and these are some of the highlights that I found. Starting on Tuesday, February 4th, we have the North Mississippi All-Stars, who are also playing a show the next night at the Stateroom, a two-night stand from these guys. They are an amazing live group, basically led by Luther Dickinson, an amazing guitar player. He played in the Black Crows for several years in a little bit of a break they were taking with the North Mississippi All-Stars. They're bluesy, they have some scorching guitar parts, really good stuff. Highly recommend going to see them at least once during those two nights. Also on Wednesday, February 5th, Grant and Twain opens at Salt Lake Acting Company, a show about, you guessed it, Ulysses S. Grant and Mark Twain. That should be a really interesting, cool look into a little bit of history at that fine little local theater. Thursday, February 6th, Reggie and the Full Effect. They used to play here, it felt like, every 3 months for years. Took a little pause, I think, while the Get Up Kids were doing their reunion thing. Now Reggie and the Full Effect is back. They're headlining at Kilby Court on that night. Friday, February 7th, Keller Williams at Park City Live. If you've never seen this guy, he's remarkably skilled at playing guitar and making loops out of it on the fly and creating these giant symphonic sounds. Really fun live shows. Also that night, it's Ogden First Friday Gallery Stroll up in O-Town. Then Saturday, February 8th, it's the 5th annual Samba Queen Gala at the Urban Lounge. That will be a blast. See some amazing dance going on. And then Monday, February 10th, everybody's favorite childhood basketball team, the Harlem Globetrotters. Love the Harlem Globetrotters. Love hearing the song Sweet Georgia Brown live. They're playing at Energy Solutions Arena against, I'm going to guess, the Washington Generals, the team they always play against. So if you've never seen them, pretty fun, pretty silly. Good excuse to get down to the Energy Solutions Arena when you don't have to worry about shitty sound at a concert. That is your weekly daily calendar. As always, go to slugmag.com. Check out those listings. There's always new stuff going in there. You can add your own listings if you're the sort who is booking shows somewhere. Those are free, and for a mere $5 a month or $50 a year, you can add some quality links to your content. One of the music-based films that premiered at Sundance this year was the Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds docudrama called 20,000 Days on Earth. Pretty interesting look at a fictional day in the life of Nick Cave, who is an amazing songwriter, incredible performer. This film examines that fictional day from this current point in his career, shows his process in writing a new piece of music, and he turns it into an amazing performance, of course. The film combines live performances, some voiceovers from Nick Cave and others, some home recording sessions and other footage. He actually showed up here and did a little Q&A session after the premiere. This is a song from Nick Cave's newest album that was called Push the Sky Away. This is the title track.
I was right. The sun was rising from the field. they think that you should do it the same. You've gotta just keep on pushing, keep on pushing, push the sky away. And if you feel you got everything you came for, if you got everything and you don't want no more, you've gotta just keep on pushing, keep on pushing, push the sky away. Some people say it's just rock and roll, but it gets you right down to your soul. You've gotta just keep on pushing, keep on pushing, push the sky.
The film will continue to be shown at festivals around the globe until it's given a full release later this year. I highly recommend you check it out. You can find out more information on the film by visiting 20,000daysonearth.com, and that's 20,000 numerically. And for more information on Nick Cave and his music, check him out at nickcave.com. We are happy, happy, happy to welcome Managing Editor Esther Moronio, Slug Film Critic Jimmy Martin, and Slug's Digital Content Coordinator, Cody Kirkland, here into the studio. First of all, welcome everybody.
Woohoo!
This is the Crackerjack team that was up at the Sundance Film Festival portion of the festivities in Park City, seeing all kinds of stuff. You've read the reviews, now we're going to hear it right from the various horses' mouths, so to speak. First of all, why don't we just start any kind of general impressions on this year compared to maybe other years you've been up there? How was your batting average? How awesome was the weather? How nice was it to not be in the inversion? What do you think, Jimmy? What was your overall impression this
God,
year?
God, see, I'm going to start that with like a downer.
It's kind of sucked.
No, it really was like a slower year. It just, I don't know, like there were some films I definitely loved, but there were a lot of films I was like, eh. Right. I guess, you know, like only one infuriated me to the point where I just wanted to strangle the director as hard as I could.
Nice. But, we'll get to that one. Right
yeah,
now.
We'll get there. But it was fun. It's just, I don't know. Like, I wasn't feeling that vibe that I felt in years past.
Yeah, you weren't overwhelmed by awesome stuff. It doesn't sound like.
But then apparently, there were some things that were out there that I just didn't see.
Sure,
so
sure.
I'm sure there were some good stuff.
Cody?
I kind of agree with Jimmy. There are probably four that stand out in my mind, but the rest kind of fade away. Mm-hmm. And I saw 12 maybe, so I don't know. It was still, I saw some good stuff, but I drank a lot less this time.
Well, I don't know. Is that good? Maybe?
I think it's good, and I didn't almost die in a blizzard. So.
That is very good. It was beautiful, as I have mentioned already.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I walked everywhere. I didn't even get on a fucking shuttle bus this year.
Me either.
I walked day or night. I walked. It was great. Esther, what was your sort of impression of the thing?
Well, I'd say that the movie portion was probably 50-50, but my experience overall, I think, was better than most years, maybe because I have more experience than other years, but this time I took time to go to some of the extra stuff, like I went to this really cool sound and vision panel and hit up some of the extra like parties and things like that. I went to the Bright Ideas magazine launch party, which was super cool.
Oh, nice.
But movies, I think I kind of agree with these guys that it was a lot of misses more than hits.
Yeah, I didn't really have any that just, I don't know, I saw about a dozen like Cody, and I think I didn't have any that just totally straight up sucked and were awful and I wanted to leave, but there weren't that many that I was like,
you didn't see the
Sleepwalker. Oh my god, this is great. I did not, yeah. I met the cinematographer getting a free beer, though. He was nice. Well, all right, well, let's get into the movies, and why don't we just, we'll just whip around and do, you know, one at a time from each of us here. Jimmy, why don't we just start? What was one of your highlights?
I've come to the conclusion that I think the best things that Sundance does are documentaries. That and their Park City at Midnight series, but
yeah, second that.
Starting with the docs, I think it was required by all film critics to go see Life Itself. I think the documentary about Roger Ebert was fantastic. It really was good. You know, you learn things about somebody who you admire, who's like in this profession, who's, I call him like the Michael Jordan of film critics. I mean, no one's ever going to pretty much be
right.
That guy again. You know, like,
exactly.
It's just what it was. It's what it is and what it will be. But you found out things like, I didn't know he was an alcoholic. Had yeah. no idea. Didn't know his wife was either. Yeah. Didn't know that he liked to fuck really weird women and bring them into bars. And like, and all his friends were like, "What are you doing? Like, you're Roger Ebert. Like, what is wrong with you?" You know, it was great. It was a great documentary. You know, and just it kind of sucks to see him decline like he did. But but I mean, the guy had the humor to the bitter end. You know.
Do you think will people who aren't as say involved in film as you are, will they be able to kind of get into that film as much as I mean,
I think
I've heard a lot of film critics speak as you have.
Yeah.
And he definitely has an interesting story, and that was one of the great things towards the end of his life was seeing him write about different things and being active on social media and stuff.
Sure, yeah.
But no, do you think a regular audience will be into it?
I think so, because I mean, what kind of drew me into it as well is the blooper reels of with him and Gene Siskel. I mean, like, they just hated each other, like, with a passion, you know, and then they kind of grew to love each other.
Right.
But, like, they're sitting there calling each other assholes, like, you know, and they're like, and action. They're like, hello, welcome to the end of the movies, you know, and they're like, cut. See you, fucking dick, you know?
So, I want to see this.
No, it was really cool. It just, you know, I think it's a great story. And I think, like, there's people in this world, I think, that they just automatically know kind of thing. And I think everybody knows Roger Ebert,
you
know? So I think it's a film that it'll definitely get picked up if it's not already. And I think everybody should check it out.
Nice.
So.
All right. Cody, why don't you hit us with one of your highlights?
Probably my favorite is a narrative film called Listen Up, Philip, and is directed by Alex Ross Perry. He's done a couple others that haven't really, not a whole lot of fame for those, but this one stars Jason Schwartzman as Philip. He's an egotistical, self-centered, really mean douchebag writer in New York.
Douchebag writer.
He's like a mid-30s guy, and he's working on, or he just finished his second novel, and he's just being a total dick and is extremely self-absorbed, and every line that comes out of his mouth is like comedic gold. It's like, and it's really literary, and the film is pretty self-aware with that and has a lot of writing cliches. Like the writer that needs to escape the city and goes to his country getaway and learns how to be an even bigger self-centered dick. And it's really, really funny, and the acting is amazing. It's also got Elizabeth Moss from Mad Men.
She seemed to be in every movie up there this year.
Yeah.
Can I just mention that somehow?
She was Philip really Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
Him too. Nice. But it was really, really funny and really smart. They could probably publish the screenplay as a book and I'd buy it.
Oh, wow. Nice. Well, that's a good endorsement.
Really funny,
yeah, excellent. Esther, a highlight for you?
So my very favorite was Fishing Without Nets, and the filmmaker is actually someone who's about my age. He's like a 27-year-old, which is pretty impressive to me, I guess, because I can't imagine myself doing something like this. His name's Cutter Hodiern, and the film's basically about Somali pirates who... Pirate, I guess? Is that right? Who pirate...
They swashbuckle, I believe.
Yeah. An oil tanker off the coast of Somalia, and I don't know if you guys saw Captain Phillips with Tom Hanks. Well, that movie sucks. And this movie is absolutely amazing.
Captain Phillips.
Yeah, so it takes on the point of view of the pirates, and particularly one guy whose name is Abdi, and the story is actually based off of the real actor who they found by doing some like informal casting sessions at a restaurant in Kenya.
Oh, wow.
And a lot of the character's backstory is just runs parallel with the actor's backstory, which is that he's like a young father. His dad died when he was young. He's supporting his family, and he kind of has to start pirating to make money to, you know, make ends meet. But what's so awesome about this movie is that it's just super intense the whole time. Vice Media, you know, Vice Magazine, they actually picked it up because it was a short two years ago at Sundance. They picked it up and funded it as a feature length. They have some crazy stories about like stuff that happened in Africa because they filmed it in East Africa. But the filmmaker, what really struck me is that he's American, and most of the actors don't speak English. No. So the way that he worked with them was, so he won the Best Director Award at Sundance, but he had a translator, and he would tell the translator to tell them what the scene was about and how it would end. And the actors improvise the dialogue, and because Somali is such a rhythmic language, he would tell them how to use like intonations and body language and stuff to get the point across.
Oh, wow.
And it's amazing.
And it worked.
I mean, the acting is great. The dialogue is just very poetic. You know, you'd have to read it, but yeah. It was my favorite film.
Nice.
Hands down.
That sounds like, yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about that one. Jimmy, how about a couple more of your highlights and maybe a low light?
Well, yeah, I'll do like two fast ones. Cold in July was really good. This is with Michael C. Hall. Everybody knows him from Dexter. Takes place like in the late 80s, I think. He's rocking a crappy mustache and a mullet. And basically the film starts with him killing and then a home invader and, you know, feels bad about it. And then word spreads around town, finds out that the kid who broke into his house, his father's just now getting out of prison. And so he's played by Sam Shepard. And so he starts terrorizing the family. But what's cool about it is that, like, you think that it's going to be just them, you know, going at each other. Well, that's not the case at all. Without really ruining anything, they partner up because something else is going on.
Oh, wow.
And the director said, like, he's like, yeah, this movie, I want to say, if I remember the quote right, he's like, this movie is about a guy who grew a shitty mustache and a mullet, and then and he's just a simple guy who works at a frame shop, and then becomes friends with Chuck Norris and Charles Bronson, you know? Because then all of a sudden, Don Johnson shows up as this, like, private detective, who's fucking hilarious.
Nice.
So,
oh.
It was great when I saw it, like, because it starts off, it says East Texas, 1989 or something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I didn't know anything about the film. I'm like, oh, shit, is this a true story? Okay, like that. And as it was going more deep, I'm like, there's no fucking way this is real. Like that. So sure enough, it's just based on the novel. But that was good.
Nice.
My best of the festival, though, and it's what I ended on, and after this, I was like, I'm done, was The Raid 2. The Raid 1 was here, I think, 2 years ago,
yeah,
2011.
Yeah, just a couple years ago.
You know, this one is, someone described it perfectly to me was, before I saw it, was it's the Dark Knight to Batman Begins, where, you know, The Raid was amazing. You know, it's Indonesian martial arts film. And this guy just, like, ramped it up to, you know, 100%. And it's not just in a building anymore. It's citywide, you know. I was scared because it's 150 minutes long.
Right.
And I'm like, dude, I don't know, man, like that. No, it's good.
It's
like,
all right.
You know, like, when I was done, like, I was almost, like, out of breath. I was like, holy
shit.
Wow,
nice.
And so he came out and he talked about it. And he's just like, yeah, I wrote that one first as a standalone movie. I had nothing to do with it. And then I couldn't get it funded, so I did The Raid. And all of a sudden, I'm like, this could work, like, as a sequel, you know? So he just, like, already had it written, you know?
It's just an expanded Raid.
Yeah,
nice.
And so my biggest comment and question to him was, yeah, have fun with the MPAA, because there's no fucking way.
Mega bloodshed.
Oh, like, you see a guy get shot in the face with a shotgun point blank, like that, and it's like, and that's not just, like, and it cuts away fast. No, it just sits there, and, like, you know.
You get to sit there watching it.
It's insane. So that was actually my favorite of the festival, and that was, I think it comes out in April, actually, at the Broadway. So
nice.
They've already got it slated. And then the worst one, I said it before, I'll say it again, The Sleepwalker.
Yeah.
When your film's 92 minutes long and I look at my watch and it's an hour in and nothing has happened, go to hell.
You're killing me.
It was so terrible. Like, in my review, I wrote, like, I don't know how you got into Sundance. Like, with thousands of submissions, how did you get in, you know? Awful. Just crap.
Noted. Missed that one. If it gets picked up, who knows?
Oh, I hope it doesn't.
Cody, a couple more highlights and or a low light?
My other two favorites were both documentaries about Western colonialism in Africa. I'm not, like, into politics or whatever, but I kind of gravitate toward documentaries about fucked up shit. And these are both extremely fucked up. The first one, Concerning Violence, was directed by, I don't know how to pronounce his name because it's Swedish, but Goran Hugo Olsson. He made the Black Power mixtape a couple years ago. And this is kind of, whereas that showed what was going on in the US in the 60s and 70s with the Black Power movement, this showed what was happening in Africa. A lot of native uprisings, trying to claim independence from French and Portuguese colonials, and it wasn't just like a normal interview and all this stuff documentary. It was like visual poetry. It had Lauryn Hill narrating, reading from this like an anti-colonial book. A lot of archival footage, and yeah, that one was really good and depressing. But the next, We Come as Friends, was about the same thing, but What's Going On Now, by Hubert Sopper. He built a plane and flew from France to Africa and just kind of documented what's going on now. Chinese oil people in, what was it, Rwanda, I can't remember, but fucking everything up. Texas evangelists trying to save the souls of all the naked
African
natives.
People. Yeah. Oh, geez.
Really depressing, but it's like kind of necessary stuff to see.
Illuminating. I do love how the documentaries definitely take you into these places in the world a lot of times at Sundance where you would never get that story unless you sit in a theater for an hour, 2 hours, whatever,
yeah,
and see it. That's for sure.
And after that, I just kind of stared straight ahead for 3 days thinking, oh, we're fucked.
We're all fucked. We're fucking up that continent. Is there a couple of other highlights for you? Quick hitters?
Yeah, definitely Blue Ruin. I think you and I were in that.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, showing together. Yeah, and the director for that is Jeremy Saulnier. He did Murder Party, which was like just a campy kind of midnight movie. But Blue Ruin is, it's a revenge movie. But the main character, Dwight, who's played by Macon Blair, he barely says a word throughout the whole thing. And there's even a part where usually, like in that point of the film, the character would, you know, go on this long explanation on what's happening and whatever. Yeah. But he just says straight up, well, I don't have a speech for you. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, that's right.
But in my review, I called him the MacGyver of murder because basically he just takes stuff that's around him and fucks people up.
Yeah.
So
amateur assassin for sure. But
yeah.
It was good.
Yeah, it was really good. I suggest that one, and I'm sure it's going to become like cult classic when it gets released.
Yeah.
Ones that I didn't like, I'd say Song One with Anne Hathaway in it. One of the most boring movies ever.
It sounded boring even the description in their own book, I thought. I was just like, no.
Yeah, it's supposed to be, I don't know, highlighting the Brooklyn indie music scene, which it did a good job of doing that, but had just these long scenes of dialogue that were so dull. And she said that it was her most understated role. Well, I wrote in my review that I would have rather heard more from the coma patient than her. So, don't go see that.
Don't go see Song One, and then probably will get released with Anne Hathaway, I'm assuming, right? Well, we're going to wind up our little group here. Any last-minute salvos you guys feel passionate about throwing in there?
There's I know I got the survey that we're going to take, you know, to tell Sundance how they did. There's two things I'm going to tell them. One is you need better descriptions in your program because they were weak
really
this year.
Shortened them.
They were
significantly the last little while, right?
Something called the Young Ones that like was about like, post-apocalyptic. It was like Mad Max, but like about water instead of oil. Didn't say anything about that thing. I was like, I would have been there day one.
Yeah,
I've
seen that. Yeah.
And so that was the one. And then two, stop having screenings at the public library because it's the worst theater ever.
It's not a good place to see a movie. That's for sure. You guys, Cody, Esther, any little last minute?
I really loved the Q&As, and I think they did a really good job with some of the panels. I don't know, everything seemed really organized this year. Also, I love that Sundance is now letting you do more ticket ordering online. That is fucking fantastic, and so
a major jump forward.
Yes,
that's
yes.
For sure.
Oh, and also the Sundance app. Good job. Good job.
Good app. Nice.
I didn't see the Sundance app, but I did see a guy hacking apart barbecue ribs while sitting in line in the press tent.
I was with you.
Yeah. Dan was right behind me.
Been to Fresh Market and had a rack of ribs.
Yeah, he was just cutting up his rack of ribs with a pocket knife, eating them out of tin foil on the floor. It was something to see.
That was right before R100, I think.
R100.
Maybe the one most fucked up movie I've ever seen.
I forgot to talk about that Japanese S&M thriller. It was insane. See that one.
It was insane. Well, I mean, this is all great stuff. I'm excited because you guys all talked about movies that I haven't seen, and I saw about a dozen of them up there, so that's great. All of us can go online, of course, slugmag.com, read all the reviews from Sundance 2014, as well as Slamdance 2014, And of course, you can read Jimmy's reviews every month in Slug Magazine. And he will be back soon to talk spring films, which is unbelievable that we're right around the corner. But
it's creepy.
There's probably like a superhero movie starting like next week or, well, after we get through all the February crap.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for coming in, you guys. It's awesome.
Yeah,
thanks.
Word.
As always, thanks for listening to Slug Soundwaves. And for all things Slug Magazine, be sure to visit us at slugmag.com. Next week, we're going to have Jeffrey Stedman from Yelp, Utah in to talk about wine all around Utah. We'd like to hear what your favorite local wines or wineries are. Send us an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or hit us up on Twitter @slugsoundwaves or facebook.com/slugsoundwaves. We may just talk about your wine on the show. And considering there's only a few wineries, we'll probably cover all the ground there is to be covered. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine, produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Esther Moronio, sitting right here, Alexander Ortega, also sitting right here, and myself, Dan Nalen. Executive producer is Angela H. Brown. The theme was performed by Lindsay Heath and Mike Sasich. Main logo and art design is by T-Don, and technical design is by Kate Colgan. Be sure to fire us up next week. See ya!